Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 4!
Brilliant. I don't think they're going to get it.
One take. We get on one take?
Do you think they'll get it? I don't think they'll get it.
It's fine. Doesn't matter.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Wagner, and I am joined again by our good friend,
Nick Scalera.
And we are back to talk about Revolver, my personal favorite album of all time. Yesterday, we talked about the remix and specifically dug into the remix and how they did it and the differences. Today, we're going to talk about what came with also came with the album was a whole series of outtakes. And we're going to talk about that today. What do you think, Nick? Up for it?
Yeah, I'm a bit excited about this. Oh, man, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to these outtakes. It's pretty embarrassing, actually. But there's a lot of amazing stuff that was revealed, and we will talk about it forthwith.
I think one of the big things about these outtakes that's a little bit different than some of the others is they're somehow really revealing more than I think a lot of other outtakes are. For some reason, I don't know why. I personally enjoy these more than I did on any of the other albums. I thought they were really insightful. We were talking about this earlier when we were texting back and forth and talking about this album. Even though the Beatles always made a jump from album to album, even between Rubber Soul, as great as Rubber Soul is, this jump is actually fairly significant. What do you think, Nick? Do you agree with that?
Completely agree. And looking back at the what Mike and I call the Bible, which is the Mark Lewisohn book, The Complete Beatles Recording Sessions, and just kind of looking back and seeing when these things were recorded and what take was done when, and there's like a little introduction, and I'm just going to read this quote because I think this quote from Mark Lewisohn really encapsulates why Revolver was just such a huge leap. All right, so it starts off as like this. Quote, in 1965, the Beatles recordings had been progressing quite nicely, thank you, but here was a quantum jump into not merely tomorrow, but sometime next week. Take one of Mark One, the working title of Tomorrow Never Knows, the latter being a Ringo-ism seized by John as the ideal title for his masterpiece, was a heavy metal recording of enormous proportion, with thundering echo and booming, quivering ocean bed vibrations. And peeking out from under the squall was John Lennon's voice, supremely eerie, as if it were being broadcast through the cheapest transistor radio from your local market and delivering the most bizarre Beatles lyric yet, including one line taken directly from Dr. Timothy Leary's version of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So, it's worth noting, for those that don't know, the first thing that was recorded for the Revolver session was Tomorrow Never Knows, which is the most mind-blowing song on the album. It was the first thing they did.
That's amazing. The other thing that I think is really what these outtakes reveal is how amazingly fast they were working at this time.
Yeah.
Using that book that Nick referred to, the first session of Revolver was April 6th, and the final mixing for stereo and mono was June 22nd, and I counted 39 sessions. That's just, and there was 16 songs that were ultimately released from those sessions. That's just, the amazing difference and quality of the songs, and it wasn't like they were just setting up, you know, mics in a room and recording. I mean, you have Eleanor Rigby with the strings. You have Love You Too with the sitar. You have Got to Get You in My Life with the horns. You have Tomorrow Never Knows with God knows what. How amazing how they did that. They had backwards tapes. They had it just goes on and on. And what's amazing about it, it doesn't sound like a lot of times today, it feels to me like a band goes, right, here's our song with the backward tapes, you know? Right, here's our song with the sort of a string quartet. or whatever. It's like they just effortlessly move from song to song at just breathtaking speed as well.
You know, it's just this idea of a quantum leap. Like, how did these things happen? You try to sort of think back. And if you look at the date ranges, to Mike's point, in terms of how quick they were working, the last song recorded before Tomorrow Never Knows, so Tomorrow Never Knows, or Mark One, as it was known, was recorded April 6, 1966. The last song they recorded was November 11th, 1965. That song was Girl from Rubber Soul. The jump from Girl to Tomorrow Never Knows is like, that's a jump off a cliff, if ever there was one.
There's nothing on Rubber Soul that leads you to believe that something like Tomorrow Never Knows is on the way.
And yet you also wonder, you know, I often think about alternate history. So, you know, that time period between late November and April was the first time the Beatles had had a few months off in their career, right? Since like 1962, when they were touring nonstop. And what happened was there was supposed to be, they had signed a movie contract for three movies, and they had done Hard Day's Night and Help. And what the plan was in early 1966 was to take 3 or 4 months off to do another movie, which luckily for posterity was a terrible script that the Beatles rejected, and they didn't end up doing this movie. It was going to be like sort of a Western thing, which is just hard to imagine. But so they had 4 months off to kind of be at home listening to music, messing with their tape loops, Paul going out to see avant-garde performances, and like, this is what came out of 4 months of like relative inactivity is this album. Makes me wonder if they had a bit more time off at other times, what we would have gotten.
One of the things we want to step through is just bringing a few highlights from the outtakes. And we talked about this song in the episode yesterday, is Love You Too, but we would like to talk about that again. I know, Nick, you really enjoy this song, and let's talk about this one a little bit.
Yeah, so what you get the outtakes, there's a lot of them, you can stream them all if you're interested. I highly recommend you do. But a few of them sort of stuck out for me. And this one, Love You Too, there's two parts that I want to bring up. The first is take one, and that is George doing a demo of this song. It's just George with the guitar and Paul singing background vocals. And to hear the skeleton of this song that became so complex is really fascinating. But what I could also tell is you can tell that clearly George always intended this to be like an Indian freak out song, even with just him and the guitar, because the way he's droning through this song, you could just feel that he was looking for that sort of Indian type feel early on. So it's incredibly revealing to hear him doing that. And then after that, the song that comes right after that is called The Unnumbered Rehearsal. And this is George in the studio practicing the sitar. And it is unbelievable to hear him picking through these parts and just the amount of work that went into it. And the idea that, like, at the height of his fame, George is like, I'm just going to learn a brand new instrument from a completely foreign musical context.
Right.
And he just wasn't just like plinking at it, right? You know, on Norwegian wood, and, you know, the Stones use a sitar in a song. Other bands did. It was like plinking out a guitar riff on guitar. Well, that's not what George went for.
Right.
George went for the full on raga, you know, the full on Indian style with all the droning, all the complexity. And it's just amazing to hear him sort of work through it. And at one point, he's like, ow, ow. And he's clearly complaining about how much his fingers hurt, like trying to get through it. So it's a great moment.
Each day just goes so fast. I turn around, it's past. You don't get time to hang a sign on me. Love me while you can, for I'm a dead old man.
We'll be right back.
feeling. Ow. Well, ow.
The next song we want to talk about is And Your Bird Can Sing. They included this on here again. It was originally on the Anthology 2, I think it was, where they have the initial version of it was done with George's Rickenbacker. It's kind of got a birdsy sound, and this is kind of a famous bootleg that went around for years because it has got John and Paul giggling while they're singing the song, and like everybody, you kind of like crack up listening to it because you don't know what they're laughing at, but you start laughing too. But I think what's important about this song is what it shows is the song sounds really good. And in this form, when you hear how they went from that, they said, okay, scrap that, which is a great version, and did a completely different version. They upped the key. They made the guitars, a little more muscular, yeah, I think.
For sure.
Is that a fair word? And just the track just took off. That I think that's one of the most important things about the Beatles. It's just they took something that was great and went just took it to a complete another level. And I think, Nick, you had said like this is one of the songs that you've really not changed your mind about, but kind of like this re-release opened your eyes to it. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you listen to some of these outtakes, and this is throughout all of the outtakes, really, not just the ones related to this song, it's just that they, with a one exception I'll bring up, but it feels like they always made the right choice, right? They always knew when to edit and when to step back and to pull things off of songs that didn't make sense. And what's amazing, if you listen to this version and the 12-string Rickenbacker, it's got that birds-like sound that we talked about. It's an okay song. It's a decent little song, but it's nowhere near what they ended up with. And the power of the final version makes it this sort of guitar god tour de force. Like it's the guitars sound absolutely amazing. And Mike and I have talked quite a bit offline about how did they get this guitar sound that they got on Revolver? And this one is just amazing. It's, I think it's a Gibson SG and a Casino. We're not 100% sure. They are using different amps, but wow, it just sounds so great. I just never get tired of listening to them go through that riff over and over again. So yeah, phenomenally, very revealing here that they had a halfway decent song and they built it into a Stone Cold classic.
The next song we're going to talk about is Dr. Robert. And Nick, I know this is one of you really like this particular outtake.
I do. I mean, this is one that, like, here's a version of a song that kind of stands on its own. It's different than the final version. I'm not saying it's better, but it's different. And it's interesting because here you get to hear Lennon's vocals without the ADT, right? With the automatic double tracking, which is a process that the Beatles and their engineers invented in the studio for this album. So you get to hear Lennon's vocals just straight, and they sound great. And they take the harmonium out of it. So it's a bit raw and more dirty version of Dr. Robert. It's 30 seconds longer. So if you like your Dr. Robert, you get an extra 30 seconds, but it's great. And this song is another one that's just grown in my estimation. It's just, you know, we also have to sort of think back to the context of 1966, where the Beatles are just putting a song out there that's saying, I go to this doctor and get drugs and he makes me feel good. You know, and they,
not just drugs, this LSD.
Right. And they hadn't officially, you know, 99.9% of the fans didn't know that they were taking acid. I mean, that came out like a year later, I think.
Couple years later.
And then John got pissed at Paul because he was the last one to use acid.
He
was the last one to use it and the first one to, you know,
first
take credit.
On TV.
First one to take credit for it. But yeah, this is a great version. And that's the thing about all these outtakes is that some of them, again, are like just fun alternate versions that sound great, not quite there, but, you know... there's some treasures here for sure. And, you know, I was listening, Mike was saying how this, you know, you were saying how this was your sort of favorite set of outtakes. I was listening to the Pepper outtakes, recently, and I have to agree, like the Pepper outtakes are very, very repetitive. And I just don't know if you hear slight differences. It feels like they made, Giles Martin and, whoever else made these choices that they kind of chose the right. You didn't give you 12 versions of Strawberry Fields like you get in Pepper. They give you the right versions. So you can hear the evolution, right? You hear take 1, 3, and 5 and you're like, yep, that's how it got from A to Z. I didn't need the, you know, 2 and 4 in between there.
Ring my friend, I said you'd call Dr. Robert. Day or night, he'll be there any time at all. Dr. Robert, Dr. Robert, you're a new and better man. He helps you to understand. He does everything he can. Dr. Robert, if you're down, he'll pick you up. Dr. Robert, take a drink from his special cup. Dr. Robert, Dr. Robert, he's a man you must believe, helping anyone in need. No one can succeed like Dr. Robert. Well, well, well. Just to see yourself with Dr. Robert.
Two songs that were not on the album but were recorded during the Revolver sessions are Paperback Writer and Rain, which is one of the most amazing singles and B-sides, except for Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, which were to come next. I was like, they were pretty good. And, but this, I think Rain was the number one song on the Beatles countdown for Rock in the Suburbs. I should have gone back and look it up. I might have to edit this in there.
That's,
so you might get
correct.
Me checking,
that is correct.
Double checking this. The much discussed on Beatles, Beatle groups about the speed of the outtake of Rain. So just in case you don't know, Rain was recorded at a faster speed purposefully so that they could slow it down. Like they literally slowed the tape down. So it gave a sort of a deeper feel and a sort of more surreal feel to the song. But the version that's on this, it just sounds insanely fast. I still not convinced he got the right speed on it. I don't know. I he says he did, but okay.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Mike. Like we talked about this quite a bit. Like I guess there's two theories here. Number one, that this is accurate and that Ringo and Paul played at this speed, which is absolutely just mind-bendingly amazing. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, it kind of sounds like a silent movie, you know, and like everyone's kind of running around too fast.
Like everybody's like the old, they're waving, yeah. like going
slapstick
really fast.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Ringo's hitting every fill spot on, and Paula's playing way up the neck at the bass. And it's just, but it doesn't sound, it sounds slightly inhuman to me. Worst case scenario, maybe it's sped up a little faster, even if that's the case. Still, wow.
So I went and checked, and it's like, this is B flat, I think it is. And it's like, I think they would have played it in A. I don't know. It doesn't. We're going to play for you folks here, and you can like hear it go like, you can decide for yourself.
There's one clue that I actually just noticed today.
Here's another clue for you all. See what I did there?
For your all. The walrus was pulled. At the end of this, so you listen to this sped up rain, and they're theoretically, you're watching them play this at an insanely ridiculous speed. There is like a bit of vocal that's picked up, and you sound like, you know. You know, it doesn't sound right. So maybe it was the right speed. I don't know.
But anyway, here it is. One, two. Let's also talk about the outtake for Paperback Writer, which is just this might be my favorite of the outtakes, because it just gives you that really raw feel of the song. That's Paul on guitar. He overdubbed the bass later, and Paul and George and Ringo, I think, on this take. And it's just such a rocking song. And I know John was always, he called it a day tripper, but it's still really, really great. I know you like this one as well, right?
Well, Nate? Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic to hear it without the vocal and just to hear the backing track. It is, you know, how are they? They were so tight as a band, and I guess they hadn't really been touring. They've been off for a few months. We talked about this earlier, but like, man, wow, they just really just rip into this thing.
They rip this.
They rip into it.
One, two, three, four.
Focus on a couple of the outtakes here, but I really enjoyed them all, and I can't say enough how stunning it is how fast they move between takes to get to what the final version is. It's really incredible to think that in 39 sessions these 16 songs were produced. That is just, if I count it correctly, but I whatever it is, it's 2 months, you know, that was April 6th to June 22nd, a little over 2 months. It's just a stunning speed for the quality of the songs, the difference in the songs. I recommend going through, and even if you're not a huge fan, just to really appreciate the magic that band was.
Yeah, and the other thing you get, like, and I think this will be interesting even to the non-purists, is like the studio banter is also an aspect of this that's pretty hilarious. Like, you can hear there's one, I forget what song it is, but there is this interchange amongst the four Beatles where it's kind of hilarious because Paul can't figure out how to start this song. And the and George and John are like, well, just start with the organ and then count it in and just go back and forth about how to start. And you're like, these geniuses, right, have produced all this music, and here they just can't figure out how to start this song. So you get that. It does humanize them, too. You hear them. And it's some interesting interplay between George Martin and the Beatles, and also George Martin and some of the classical musicians who came to play on Eleanor Rigby. And so,
oh yeah, that's a nice interchange. Yeah,
so that's fun too.
One thing I wanted to mention was that was commented a lot on when this came out, is how Yellow Submarine progressed. It started out as a very sort of sad song, really. It was just John on an acoustic guitar.
In the place where I was born, no one cared, no one cared.
And then, you know, it turned into what we all came to know. And again, like I was talking about, like, this, they just weren't recording, you know, guitar, bass, and drums. And, you know, like, they recorded the first album. They went in, mic'd everything up, and go. I mean, they have, you know, they effortlessly incorporate marching bands and, you know, ocean sounds and bubble sounds and John being John, you know, with his Life of Ease and all that stuff. We live with Yellow Submarine most of our lives, but it just sounds effortless, like how it just kind of rolls off. Everybody knows Yellow Submarine, right? You just, like, everybody knows the song, and it just kind of falls out of the sky, it seems like.
Yeah, it's one of the best example, maybe the only example. You don't hear many of them where you could really hear on some of the versions here, John and Paul working together on a song and working through it, right? So John comes with this sad, you know, this is a song that could have been on, I've heard people say this song could have been on Plastic Ono Band. It's like that.
Yes, I agree.
Like, raw and emotional, where he's like, you know, I came from the town and no one cared. You know, is he referencing his childhood, whatever? And then Paul's like, you know, let's add a Yellow Submarine to this. You know, and that's just such the dynamic. Yeah, as you do. It's such a dynamic of the John and Paul. It's sort of, that's, you know, it's been talked about a lot. And if you've listened to anything about Revolver, you probably heard about this. But this is a revelation. No one knew about this before this outtake came out, right? No one knew that this song started as a sort of sad John ballad and then became this sort of kids' anthem, you know?
Yeah, the myth was always that it was a Paul thing. This is the classic, you put John and Paul together and this is what you get.
Well, and it's I hate to use this quote, but I'm going to use it, but like, it is the I gotta go for this one. All right. It's an example of song of Paul taking a sad song and making it better.
Oh, good God.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, this is really
okay. And that wraps up this episode, folks. I'm just kidding. There you go. Oh, don't send your complaints to Nick Scalera, right? Not me.
I'll be off Twitter by the time you send your complaints. I'll be on Mastodon at that point.
Yeah, we'll all be off Twitter. So with that in mind, I think we both really, to wrap this up, we both really love this album. It's, is that, how does this rank for you up there?
I mean, is there a word that's stronger than love?
it's just, I never tire of it. Yeah. I've listened to it 20 times probably since it came out. It's like so good.
I mean, I do think it's one that, you know, we've all heard these things a million times, but I've found over the last month or so that I can listen to Revolver over and over again and not get bored. And there are other Beatles albums I get bored with after a while, but not this one, because every song is so different. It's like a complete kaleidoscope, and it's like a journey from song to song. And it's also like, we didn't talk about this, but like it's sequenced so well, you know, it just, everything flows into each other. And so even if you're not into the whole remix mono stereo, you don't care about that gobbledygook, take some time to listen to Revolver again as an album. If you come out of this with anything, give it another listen if you haven't listened to it in 10 years.
And then a fun game is, where would you place Paperback Writer and Rain in there? I want to tell you my answers when this episode comes out. I'll put it in the comments on the Facebook page. So with that in mind, as we close this up, if you want to comment on this episode, you can do it on Mastodon at subrepresentmastodon.com, where we'll all be going when we leave Twitter, right? I think this will be the first episode on Mastodon. Is that right?
Right.
Jim and Patrick, check me on this. But no, seriously, you can call the Suburban Party line where Echo Park Jimmy will be happy to take your call. 5-5-something-something-1984. On Twitter, Facebook, rock@suburbs.com email, where else? And open up the window and yell. That's my personal favorite.
Exactly.
I think that's it, Nick. That was really fun. Two episodes. I hope you love Revolver as much as we do. Anything want to add?
If you don't, then what's wrong with you, really?
Exactly.
Just go
play all the Beatles albums. Right. I'm like a kid. Just play them over and over and over.
Just
I'm
play cool. them. Yeah. I mean, it was a pleasure. We've been talking about this nonstop, so it was great to have a chance to share these thoughts with the wider community, and we'd love to hear from you and just keep the dialogue going on this.
Yeah. And I'd be curious what people think. Go ahead and tell us how you would place your Paperback Writer and Rain into the album. All right, everybody. I'm Mike Wagner.
And I'm Nick Scalera.
And we'll talk to you sometime soon. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I know about this.